As January grinds to a gritty, icy conclusion, making a mockery of our Happy New Year wishes. Happy New Year from the Tux Radar podcast. This is season, unbelievably, season 5.
Is it?
Episode 1, yes.
5 years.
Five years! Wow.
We should count the number of episodes, because that would mean we're going to be close to episode 100.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, like, all great running series do something special for their 100th.
Like, I should.
Go to the pub and then just leave it to automatically record.
We should do that. We should do that. Anyway, let's move on to things that we should do later on in the open ballot section. For now, I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this episode, we have lots of news. We have discoveries of the week or fortnights. We have rants and raves. Do we have Speak Your Brains?
Oh, we have one Speak Your Brains.
We have a Speak Your Brain, an open ballot, and maybe, just maybe, one last thing. If you like the sound of that and would like to subscribe to a version but done more professionally on paper or on electrons, you can do so at tinyurl.com/offer1. It's an extra special Christmas offer. Hang on, is that still right?
Oh, I didn't change that. That might not be right.
Okay. maybe you can subscribe to the Linux format. We don't know. Maybe just Google it. But you can get us now on Google Play, which is... It's the old name for the Android App
market.
Store, Android market. So you can read Linux format in digital format without having to do it through Ubuntu or an iPad. And,
yeah.
And with more on that news, here's a special announcement from Graham.
Well, yeah, I had this idea, really, that one way that you could really help, and I mean this kind of humbly, is that if you like the magazine or you think you like the magazine, it would really help us if you could leave a positive review on a Google Play. It would help us a lot. That's all I'm asking, really. The last episode was downloaded by 5,000 people, so if just a small proportion of those people could leave a positive review for us on Google Play, it would make a big difference for us. That's it. Thanks.
And that magazine again, Linux Format. Right, now it's time for some news.
Okay, so before we get into the guts of the news, I think sort of the big story of the last month, really, since last podcast, is the sad news that Aaron Schwartz took his own life. I'm sure most of you have heard about this already. He was being hounded by law enforcement officials over some action he was taking to try and provide people with free access to court documents. It was a really big campaigner for freedom of speech and digital freedoms, and it's a great loss to everyone in the freedom world. But obviously our thoughts go out to his friends and family at this hard time.
Yeah, you're right. I think lots of more eloquent people have said it, you know, everything that can be said.
Yeah.
He was a big part of defeating SOPA in the US, wasn't he? And, you know, he would have had a fantastic future, and, you know, we're all going to have to be extra diligent in the future because he's not around.
Yeah. So that's a big loss. But moving on to slightly less sad news, Ubuntu have launched a phone. Andrew, you were there at the big day.
Yes, and the mini burgers were amazing. There were these little wasabi peas and chili shrimps, chili prawns.
Nice.
There was Corona and Peroni and like rosé and white wine and red wine.
Was this Canonical's new HQ?
Canonical's shiny new HQ.
Wow.
I can only imagine what it must be like to work there.
They must be doing really well.
Yeah.
Because where else would all this money come from?
Yes, the phone. I'll tell you where the money isn't coming from. It's not coming from sales of Ubuntu phones, because it's not going to be on sale in shops for about another year. Which was quite disappointing, because all cynicism aside, the phone OS that they've unveiled looks actually really good. It looks like all those years of Unity bashing and all those years of Unity not making sense have finally come to an end. Now Unity makes sense. When you can see it on a touchscreen thing that you operate with your phone, it works. It works really well. But we can't go out and buy it.
Did they let you have a go with one?
They did. I got to touch one.
Oh.
The internet wasn't working, so all I could do was take pictures. The phone app works really well. I can confirm that.
I have to agree with you, though. I mean, we've been a little harsh on Ubuntu recently. It's still a fantastic distribution. They do good things. And having watched, there's some great videos on YouTube of John O'Bacon doing a demo at CES of the Ubuntu phone. And the UI looks phenomenal. You know, we've had big talks in the office about how successful it might be and the fact that it's based on an Android kernel and yet won't run Google Play Android apps, which we think is a mistake. But if Ubuntu Canonical can get any traction with this at all, I really think it'd be a success.
I mean, my view is that the success of a phone is completely regardless of how good it actually is.
Especially
from a software point of view, it's all about gaining traction, it's about getting support of the carriers, it's all about that stuff.
Yeah.
And as yet, I mean, Ubuntu or Canonical they've never shown themselves to be good at that. They haven't got the hardware manufacturers really for the Ubuntu PCs. This is the one thing they've never been able to do. I'd love it if they can do it for this.
Yeah.
But
at the same time, there's things like Firefox OS, which has just been, you know, some of the demos they've been releasing this week look really nice. I like their HTML5 attitude towards development.
Yeah, and Sailfish looks really good.
And Tizen.
Yeah, and Sailfish will run Android apps.
Which I think, why wouldn't you? If
the stuff's already there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the compatibility layer's been made.
Yes.
They could just borrow that.
It's just about control, but I don't want to leave on a negative note with Canonical.
Mark and I were chatting about this, and he reckons that the carriers are crying out for a platform that is actually open rather than iOS, which is obviously just they control the software and the hardware, and Android, which is kind of open but isn't really, because Google can update, or they can release the latest version of Android to whoever it is that they've struck their latest deal with. If Samsung are making the latest and greatest Nexus phone, then they can give it to them and delay a year before anybody else gets it. Whereas with Ubuntu, because it will have a more open development cycle, then they won't be hampered, as it were. They won't be second class citizens.
Well, I don't know how accurate that is. I mean, once Google releases Android, there's nothing stopping HTC creating the new version and rolling it out to the phones. It's just that I suspect manufacturers don't like to do it because it means people upgrade their phones.
But there's also a pause between when they release the flagship Nexus device and when they release the source code.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, good luck to Canonical.
Absolutely, yes. I didn't try the Eaton mess, but it looked good. And the others were really nice as well. Really like those big sort of those black olives that aren't black, but they're more like purple.
I've seen.
Did that make up for travelling to London for a 5 o'clock meeting on the 2nd of January?
No, it didn't. But I did walk past Emily Wollstonecraft's house, which is just around the corner from the Chronicle office.
Did you have a bag chinking full of stolen beers as
and burgers?
Yeah. Okay, so moving on from one phone to another, we touched on it briefly, but Firefox has been showing off they've released a developer version of their phone, or they're about to release a developer version of their phone. They got the specs out, and as you mentioned before, it's all based around HTML5, so the native apps are HTML5. There's nothing more.
Which was Apple's original plan for iPhone development, until the overwhelming demand and obviousness of native applications allowed them to give away the control, which I think was that was what it was all about.
Yeah. But obviously HTML5's changed a lot over the past few years, as has the support for the newer JavaScript engines are running a lot faster.
And the hardware's got a lot faster.
The hardware's a lot faster, yeah. So yeah, I mean, it looks great. I emailed the manufacturers asking for a sample of the phone so, you know, we could test it out and review it, and they sent me a photo of the phone.
So they've already made arrangements with like a generic Chinese phone manufacturer.
Yeah,
they?
Well, it's being released through a Spanish company.
Oh, right.
As the Geek Phone. Quite aptly titled.
I can see that gaining lots of traction and mindshare among the Facebook-loving Asbo hoodie youths who use these phones.
Privacy hooligans.
Yeah, I mean, that's not necessarily their target. There's a lot of talk about how they're going for the low end, so the developing markets, the people who previously had feature phones, and yes. This being the first smartphone. And it does make a lot of sense for that. It's always going to suffer in some respect by not having the native apps. But so many things now have a web app version, a HTML5 version, that how much are you missing out? Well, we won't know because they won't send us a phone.
Does the picture look nice, though?
The picture, I didn't even open it, to be honest.
Hear this, hardware people. Send us free stuff, please.
So, yeah, and I was sort of doing some research about it, and I found out that Firefox, the first version of Firefox, was released in November 2004. That's almost exactly a year after the first version of Fedora. Incidentally, Fedora just released its 18th version, Fedora 18.
And you've got great things to say about it, haven't you?
Oh. I installed the default version, it's GNOME. We've spoken about GNOME many times, and I'm not going to go into it now. But there's a few things that really annoyed me about the new version. And the first is the installer. It's still basically the same Anaconda installer they've been using for a long time. If you've used it, you'll recognise it. But they've just moved it around, so it confuses you. Buttons are where you would not expect buttons to be. There's inconsistencies about what you should use buttons for. It's not a linear installer anymore. You don't start at the start and finish at the end. That makes sense with an installer to me. You progress through step by step. Now you sort of have to go forwards and back and settings, and sometimes the forward buttons are on the left-hand side, which always looks like back to me,
even though
it's sort of back, because you have to go back to go forwards. And it just confused me. And I install a lot of distros, and you know, more than one a week. I use a lot of installers. I rarely get confused by them, but this one confused me. And I don't understand why, because it never used to.
It annoyed Alan Cox as well. Did you see?
No, I didn't see.
This story is, it's only for a virtual machine on his desktop, but this story is that he switched from Fedora 18 to Ubuntu.
Ah.
Because he says the installer was just one of the worst things he's ever seen. And he also said that you're left with a desktop that's about as functional as a chocolate teapot.
Yeah, well,
so you're not alone.
Yeah, well, we actually gave it to Gary to have a go. Gary, he used Linux a bit, but he's not a big Linux user. And he just looked at the desktop and he's like, what? It's just a blank screen. And that's exactly it. You've got no idea what to do. And that's, if you've used, you know, GNOME, even if you've known, use GNOME 2, you have to use the top left hand corner, and you know, blah, blah. But then you get to the lock screen if you leave your computer long enough, and that confused me completely. I'm just sat there looking at the screen with a clock on it. How do I unlock my screen? It took a few minutes before I realized you have to click on the screen and hold, and then drag the whole thing up. And it does look quite good when you get used to it, but there's nothing, you know.
Yeah, that's bad.
Occasionally an arrow flashes up, but it's not even an arrow, it's like an angled line.
Chevron.
Yeah. Just stop
What's
messing
happening?
With stuff that
What's
works.
What's happening to the world?
As a lot of people will have commented, I don't want to sort of ruin the suspense for the open ballot, but a lot of people have commented, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, I so agree.
The installer wasn't broken. It was a good installer. The lock screen wasn't broken. It was a good lock screen.
I mean, they've also made a lot more work for themselves. What are they doing? I've got nothing to do for the next 2 months. Let's make a new installer.
Yeah.
Have they put that shutdown button back in?
Yes, the shutdown button's
right.
Back.
Well, that's it then, obviously. They've achieved perfection, so they've just got to do chevrons.
But other than that, I mean, if you like GNOME, it seemed perfectly reasonable as an OS. Once you manage to install it. But yeah, as I said, Fedora is just about the only major distro now to stick with GNOME. GNOME, incidentally, have also just started a fundraising campaign.
Nice.
I'm getting better at them, I think. To make GNOME really focus on the privacy and security aspects. So integrating Tor, integrating encryption, integrating virtual machines to encapsulate stuff. So they really want to focus on that, it looks like, from the next release.
Well, that sounds quite useful. I like the idea of
that. Yeah. What I really hope is they do it in such a way that it can be...
It's not GNOME.
Yeah, it can be incorporated into other desktops that I can actually use.
I think people are starting to understand now that privacy is a feature.
Yes. And one of the people who started to understand that...
But not by people breaking in through his front door?
Yes. It's a certain New Zealand citizen who's released a new file sharing website, mega.co.nz, which prompted me to accidentally delete all my documents on my home computer. But I should point out this has absolutely nothing to do with him.
Mega.co.nz, that's mega cons. Are you sure you've just been massively fished?
Right. You're right.
You've fallen for
is
it.
That, is that the official?
Mega cons. He's clever.
He is. I thought I'd give it a go. I signed up for an account so I'd upload my files. So what files do I need to back up? I'll back up my documents directory. So I was using KDE at the time and I just went in through Dolphin. To be honest, I don't remember exactly what I did, but I just clipped on compress, TargetZ. And it did that and it turned out to be 4 gig. And I got bored uploading it, so I was like, I'll sack it off, I'll try it with something else. Then I deleted the TAR.gz file. Only then did I realise that it hadn't copied the files into TAR.gz, it had moved them in.
Oh dear.
That's bad.
Yeah.
I've never seen a system do that.
To be honest, I can't remember exactly what I clicked. I was in a bit of a... But yeah. So yeah, I deleted all my documents, which was a bit annoying. Fortunately, I am quite diligent in backing up, so I had copies of them all. So if you are going to try out... Megacons. Be careful you don't delete all your documents in the process. What is actually quite interesting about the new file system is, sorry, not the file system, the backup system or the document storage system, is the security it uses. Kim.com describes it as secure boot for file systems. And it is sort of quite similar to that in the way it works. Because obviously the amount of data they're holding, it's unreasonable. He hasn't just built a massive data center to host it all in. He's relying on third parties to do it. And obviously when you're sort of paying contractors to store files for you, there's the security aspects and all that. And the way it works is that their servers host the sort of your index.html page, if you like, the main page. And that includes hashes to all of all your files that are stored anywhere else. So that you know, so that's served over sort of quite a high security 2000 bit RSA SSL connection. And the others are hosted over a lower security 1000 bit SSL connection. And that is considered breakable, but that does mean that because the hash is stored securely or transmitted securely, that you can verify that the files are uploading. And I haven't looked into this in too much detail, to be honest. But that did worry me a little bit in that potentially the files that you're storing are being served over breakable encryption. So even though that you can verify that the right file gets to you, you can't
other
be sure
can
that someone hasn't sniffed it.
Mm.
I mean, we should clarify that it's still very, very difficult to break. It's not something your average guy can do on a home computer. But it is something a government could do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to investigate that into a bit more into exactly the secure model they're using. Some people have pointed out some technical difficulties with a particular implementation they've used. And I believe that Mega are working to fix that. But it looks to me like the actual structure of it could allow it to be sniffed. Again, by someone with the ability to break high but not unbreakable strength encryption. Yeah, so Kim.com, or Kim Schmitz, as his parents called him, is quite famous for being willing to speak his mind, even if that upsets some people. Another person who began speaking their mind, particularly around Windows 8, is Gabe Newell, who's recently announced the Steam Box. And it's their new console, which is rumoured to run Linux.
Didn't they say that it will run Linux?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he said in an interview that it was run Linux.
It's not official, but yeah.
I'm yet to see a press release that states it.
No, but at CES, I think.
Yeah.
They said definitely.
There was that third-party thing, the Piston. XI3 Piston.
Yeah, XI3 is the generic hardware, not the Steam Box version, but the thing made by the company that they're going to make the Steam Box with. And the Piston is the rumoured name for the Steam Box.
Well, they're going to have more than one. There's going to be one official Steam Box from Valve.
Yeah, or several tiers of official Steam Box.
Yeah.
Which, as long as, I mean, said this before, but as long as they can ensure certain quality for the lowest level so that you know that you can buy all games and still play them and have good fun, that's fine by me. Obsessive gamers can then spend £600 or £700 to have their HD 3D experience, but normal average gamers can still play Trine 2 or whatever. I still think it's great news, this kind of renaissance in Linux gaming. I'm really excited by it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the big news isn't that the Steam Box has been launched. I don't do console gaming now. That's completely irrelevant. But what it will mean is obviously all the games will have to be ported to Linux to run on it.
And apparently on the Steam client for Windows and OS X, there was an advert for switching to Linux that they were pushing.
It was on the About page on the screen, on the Steam page. So, yeah, it's where you click if you want to download it.
Right. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So it wasn't quite an advert, although it was put about in some of the media as such.
Right.
It was there. And there was also some rumours I saw today that it could use the GeForce Grid, which is NVIDIA's sort of cloud hosting performer. I mean, these are sort of early stage rumours, to be honest. I mean, that could be completely irrelevant.
Yeah.
But speaking of GeForce, Nouveau have just announced that their drivers will support all current GeForce cards out of the box. So before you could do it, but you needed to sort of extract the firmware from another driver, and it was quite fiddly.
Right.
Now, out of the box support Bosch acceleration for GeForce cards.
Excellent. Which,
it makes it so much easier.
It's excellent news for people who like to play games.
Yes, and don't like proprietary drivers. Mm-hmm. So, awesome. And just one final bit of possibly good news in the patent world. The USPTO, which is the US Patent and Trademark Office, is going to host a series of roundtables. Well, two roundtables, one in Silicon Valley, one in New York, to get software developers' opinions on problems facing software patents. And I think this is actually, if you can sort of couple this with the fact that they're now reviewing the Apple patents, they're starting to tentatively reject things. This looks like it's a real swing in the way they're handling software patents, which is fantastic news, I think. And long may it continue.
Excellent.
That brings us to the end of our tenuously linked list of news.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben. Good. Thanks for
tenuous.
Putting so much effort into it.
Yeah.
Which I haven't done for Discovery of the Fortnite.
Seamless.
Although I do have discoveries. Kinda, sorta, because I did lots of tinkering over Christmas.
Yeah.
Either of you two want to go first?
I've got a couple of discoveries.
Go for it, Andrew.
Okay, cool. Two and a half discoveries. The first one integer discovery is that Windows 8 is really hard to use. I know. I'm behind the times massively on this, but this is the first time I tried to actually get hands-on experience of Windows 8 was over the New Year's and Christmas break, and it's my girlfriend's father was he'd ordered a laptop and put his copy of Office on there. But then realised it was the wrong laptop and one that he hadn't ordered. So sent it back to the shop, but that counted as an installation of Office. and that was his last one on that license. So he was all in a quandary about this until, you know, I had to explain to him that LibreOffice works perfectly well. Downloaded it, installed it, and then couldn't find it because there's no start button, there's no K in KDE, there's no top right, top left hot corner in like there is in GNOME 3. There's no way to see what there is on the machine. It should have come up in one of those funky little tile panel things, but just didn't. And we were looking at this laptop for ages, just trying to work out where this file was that I know was there because I just downloaded it, but I just couldn't work out for life me where it was.
Did you find it?
Eventually, but I don't know. I mean, like you were saying, when you were clicking around Dolphin, you didn't know what you did. I don't know what I did to find it. I was like a monkey bashing the keys, and then it came up. Oh, brilliant! Stop what you're doing. It's there now. I couldn't do it again. So there, Windows 8 in hard to use shocker. Two discoveries, which I've discovered from the Canonical press and marketing material for their recently launched Ubuntu phone, which looks great. They've got to write stuff in order to take screenshots of it. So they've got to write imaginary Twitter conversations between people. One of those said, "Music for the Masses" by the Depeche Modes and "Come on Pilgrim" by the Pixies were released on the same day, 25 years ago.
Wow.
What an amazing discovery.
Yeah.
Thanks, Canonical, for sharing that with me. There you go. That's it, really. The other semi-discovery isn't really worth sharing at this point, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so my discoveries. These were all based around the fact that a day or two ago, we discovered one of our servers had been hacked. we haven't lost any data or any... No, nothing's been compromised. It's all safe and sound. But we sort of started a bit of an investigation to see what's going on. And it turns out it's a hacker group from Romania had broken in to our torrent server. As it was, we assume it was from a Romanian IP from a domestic provider, and the tool's written in Romanian. So it is possible they've linked through there, but just sort of looking into other attacks using the same tool, they all seem to stem from Romania. So that looks like where it's come from. They've been trying to use our server to hack into computers in China and Taiwan. Don't know why that was their target. And they're using, they're trying to find weaknesses in SSH or weak SSH passwords. But they were using a very small set of usernames and passwords. They're using about 20 or so different usernames with a combination of around 3,000 different passwords, which is quite small for username and password scanning. So that looks like they were going for trying to scan a lot of servers with a few usernames and passwords to try and break in.
Yeah. Almost viral. You can imagine this thing being installed automatically, and as it, you know, logarithmically spreads across the internet, they get a much higher hit rate.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the other thing they did, as well as putting this scanner on there, is they put a virus on there, which is quite unusual. I mean, there are obviously very few Linux viruses around there. It looks like they completely messed up putting it on there, and they managed to set it. It was actually set as executable, but it wouldn't execute. We haven't found out exactly why, what stopped it executing yet. But we do appear to have been one of the very few people who've seen a Linux virus in the wild, which is quite exciting.
I don't know if it's something we should be proud of or not.
But you've captured it, though, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got a copy of it. We've disassembled it, and we're having a look at the... how it works. Basically, it's injected code. What it would have done if it ran correctly is it would scan the /bin folder and inject this code into the start of every executable in there. But in doing that, it managed to stop the injected files executing. We've had rough back of the envelope guess is that it might have injected 32-bit code into 64-bit executables. But we're not sure about that. We can tell that it never ran properly because it would have, it should have infected the whole of /bin. It didn't. Looks like they've just uploaded a few select in previously infected files. We don't know. But in the course of this, also my second discovery is how to use wildcards over SCP. I've used SCP a long time, and I've never needed to download a lot of files. And it's always something I've been aware that it doesn't work if you just put a wildcard in it.
Yeah.
But I've never actually got around to learning how you do it properly. And it's really simple. All you have to do is Is that a backslash or a forward slash to escape? I always get my slash. One that you don't use for directories. Is the other one a backslash?
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Anyway, yeah, use a backslash.
Forward slash.
Forward slash.
The one that goes...
It's a backslash.
It goes from bottom left to top right. That's the normal.
That's a forward slash.
So you use a top left to bottom right.
Yeah.
You use one of those slashes before your wild card, and that makes sure it passes the wild card to SCP and doesn't evaluate it in the directory you're actually running SCP in. Really useful. Well, it was to me.
I wasn't thinking of it, but one of my discoveries also was, so we couldn't use LS on that remote server, but you could on KDE, you could use the FISH protocol to effectively do the same thing and browse all the files and folders in the Dolphin File Manager, which was handy for a while. But my discoveries are all related to the arcade machine that I've now got at home. I spent far too long obsessively trying to fix the coin mechanism, which I finally decided was broken, and bought a new coin mechanism on eBay. And I've got that to work. So specifically, it's a Mars MS-111. Works with MAME. If you're ever in the market for buying an arcade machine and want to run Linux on it, that's the one that works.
Perfect for reclaiming your kids' pocket money.
Yeah, which is exactly what I'm using it for. And also when their friends come over to stay, or they all love playing on the arcade machine, but, you know, they have to put little 10p in. And I've added a bonus credit if they put a 50p piece in. So
that's very generous of you.
Yeah, yeah. Connected to that, one of my previous discoveries was a front end called QMC2 or something like that. I had to abandon that because it doesn't work very well if you're using just joysticks. So I use another Python script called Wahcade, Wahcate, which is ancient, but quite a few people still use it. And I created my own template for the screen resolution that I use that I don't mind sharing if anybody else is interested. It's able to probe all the PCB graphics and the marquee graphics and put them all and makes a really decent looking screen to create a... My machine's running Manjaro, which boots into sounds like a Fedora 18 like desktop with nothing on it. It's just black, and which automatically boots to Wahcade, so you don't see anything. And then the final discovery was that you can modify the shaders that the emulator uses to render these games so that somebody else has done all the hard work, but you can modify the details. So you can run a shader alongside within MAME that emulates an old CRT screen. So obviously you get the scan lines, but also effectively does the beam distortion that you get as the beams go further from the center of the screen. And also... it does rotation of the screen, so if the screen's not properly aligned, and the tilt of the screen, because many arcade machines had like a 45 degree angle where the screen, so you can actually tilt the display virtually inside OpenGL and really create a mess of your perfect pristine monitor. But I love it looks awesome. So that's my other discovery, all related to running an arcade machine. That's it.
That brings us to our halfway reminder, which this episode is about 65% of the way in.
Let's hope.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Still to come, there's open ballot. So that brings us on to the aforementioned open ballot. As previously discussed, it's been 5 years. 5 years.
Since we sat here with Paul and Mike.
Paul shouting at us, telling us where we were wrong.
I still love you, Paul, wherever you are.
So, yeah, so after half a decade of...
Oh, no.
Don't say that. After half a decade, at the beginning of which I was still only in my mid-20s.
And me in my 30s.
That's so much potential.
What have I joined?
No, I know.
Oh, no, get out while you can. Positivity. So, 5 years of open
awesomeness.
Podcast awesomeness. How do we refresh it? How do we make it cool? What do you want to see more of? What do you want to see less of? Other, you know, suggestions. What's great about the podcast? What's subprime? What can we excise? What rough edges can we smooth off? Here's what you said. predictably, you said lots of things. The most... I did a little rough tally of all the things, the suggestions that were made, and there are many, many different suggestions, which is good, because, you know, we're all different people. We've all got a lot to give. The most popular suggestion was that I should be dressed up as a penguin and interview people on the streets of Bath, which is great.
That was Ben's initial proposal, wasn't it?
That was, yeah, Ben's proposal. A Sheepy says, I would wholeheartedly vote for getting Andrew dressed up as a penguin and interviewing people in Bath. You could also get Ben dressed up as a leopard seal, secretly following him and periodically jumping on him to add tension and danger. Marvellous. Thanks, A Sheepy. Another popular option. Actually, oh, sorry, this one with 8 votes. No change. I should really put these notes into order, shouldn't I? Here we go. Linux Rich says, if it ain't broke, see title, you know the rest. Alaskan Penguin says, this is quite a long one, but it's worth looking at. I don't have any suggestions or changes, but I wanted to thank you all for your wonderful podcast and magazine. Your personalities come through in both. It might sound weird, but after listening and reading for a few years, it's almost like I know you all in some way. I imagine many LXF fans feel that way. Yeah. Frank Lindemann says, please don't change a thing except drinking a little less beer. And please hurry up with the podcast.
We haven't done that for ages.
I haven't, no. Happy with it is. Brian36 says, Tux Radar Podcast and Mintcast are the two I listen to. Quite different, so you do compliment each other. I suppose they could be bettered, but I can't see how. So that's no change. Andrew dressed as penguin. Hjauge says, can we have You Dare Us back, please? I'd love to see new pink ponies, perhaps with footage from season 3 and series 4. And, this is going to sound mean, but could we possibly have fewer episodes in the pub? I'm not saying don't get the drinks in. The podcast do not suffer from people having had a few. It's just that the sound quality tends to drop a bit. Yeah, Graham.
Yeah.
Why?
I thought the sound quality was acceptable when we did it in the pub, but I know how sensitive people are to, well, the sound of cameras, especially in the background.
Oh, yeah.
Chinking glasses must fall into the same category as camera clicks. So we've not been able to do it. We tried to do it before Christmas, but we asked the salamander if we could do it, and they never got back to us in time.
Maybe we should just get a few tins of special brew in the office.
Yeah, or just get Effie's special bottle of tequila out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We still have Wayne Rooney's whiskey.
I tried some of that. It's quite good.
It's lovely, isn't it?
I was surprised. Yeah. It doesn't look like it would be good coming out of that bottle.
Are you sure you got the right bottle?
Yes, the editor of Mac Format has a bottle of 14-year-old Yamazaki on his desk. We have homemade.
Yeah,
that says it all.
It's the difference between us and them.
Different world. Back to the pub, Merely Jim says, honestly, guys, the last few times you've done the podcast in a pub, you sound like you're having fun, and I spend the majority of the podcast laughing along with you. Great. Norwegian podcast. Norwegian Penguin says, more pub shows. And yes, that's it for the pub.
Okay, we should do some more pub shows then.
We should really, shouldn't we?
We enjoy it when we go to the pub.
We do. Now, Linux Action Show. This was mentioned as a possible comparison. Russian... This is in Cyrillic. Russian Pingvin. Russian Pingvin says, love the format, but you do sound as if you are crying into your beer sometimes. What's the competition like? I'm enjoying Linux Action Show podcasts at the moment. Do not become them, but learn a little of their showmanship, perhaps. Mm. Spasibo, tovarish. We will check it out.
As for the crying in the beer comment, I mean, you only hear a tiny, tiny fraction.
Graham edits most of it out.
By the time we get to the bottom of our pints, it's mostly just tears in the glass.
This podcast is actually 4 hours long, 4 hours of whinging and complaining that I edit down 45 minutes of kind of happiness.
Yeah, the uncut version is like Apocalypse Now Redux. just goes on.
Complete with helicopters.
So, Not Verified says quite a lot of stuff. He doesn't like the sound quality on the pub podcasts. But ends with, lastly, never ever try to imitate the Linux Action Show. I'm quite fond of it, but they're so American and bombastic, it just wouldn't work for you chaps. Lastly, I want Effie to be in every podcast.
Effie was very happy about that, but yeah, he couldn't make it in today.
Yes. I like a bit of bombast. I like a bit of Queen and Muse. It's good. Bit of Wagner. Nice. Serious comment. They're all serious, I suppose, in their own way. Noobs says, there are enough distros out there to fill a few years worth of distro of the Fortnite slots.
Hmm.
With a quick look at what it is and what it does best, worst, etc. Love the podcast and magazine. Keep up the excellent work.
It's an interesting comment, because I often think about doing distros as my discovery, because obviously I used a lot of distros.
Yeah.
And could quite easily do it every fortnight, but I don't want to over-distro load it. But yeah, I'm more.
Well, we don't spend that much time talking about distros.
Yeah, it's true.
We don't actually know the podcast.
Yeah, there's usually a bit in the news. And so yeah, I'm more than happy to do a distro of the Fortnite.
Yeah, but only when something's been, you know, a Fedora or Ubuntu or something's been released.
Yeah.
Controversy. Stuart says, the best bits of the show is when you fail to agree about something and argue about it. So perhaps a slot for the controversial items that you all have different opinions on. Yes, and Not Verified says, how about, as previously mentioned, a debate section? You could be something Linux-related, software distros, monopolistic, self-serving, benevolent dictators, bending the momentum of people for personal gain. Sorry, that was too long. You could have a debate section. One person could take a positive stance and the other a negative. This way it will be a bit balanced. Great. Controversy. We need more arguments. This is something that our...
Bring Paul back.
Yeah, we could bring Paul back. Yes.
No, actually, there wasn't much argument with Paul.
The chap who keeps making us go to meetings likes controversy.
Yeah, let's bring him in.
So we could invite Ian.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that.
So, Ian, PDF only subscriptions.
Yes.
Discuss.
God, when did we first ask for PDF only subscriptions? About a million years ago.
About 18 months ago.
God, I don't know. Guest star Dargelos says, please bribe Nick Veitch with beer, etc. To make a guest appearance on the show. He could say something memorable, don't you think?
Yeah.
And if you rearrange the letters, Dargelos, Dargelos, I think you'll find it spells Nick Veitch.
Wow.
Gregorios W. says, voice from abroad, perhaps we can have an occasional section featuring Mike Saunders rambling about something or joining you guys via VoIP or something similar. Geographically bewildered Norwegian Penguin says, great podcast, guys. I really miss Mike and Jonathan.
Yeah.
Not Verified says, a new feature, Minutes of Mike, where Mike leaves a 60-second message about anything at all he wants.
I think that's a really good idea. And feasible as well. And unlike, you know, trying to get Mike and John on VoIP. Skype, or even trying to get Nick. I might ask Mike if he's up for that.
Yeah.
You know, add £5 to his contributions budget. A pint.
£5, £120 an hour for a 1 minute section. That's great. Geographically podcast bewildered Norwegian penguin. I chopped his comment into a few bits, which is why he pops up so often. He misses Mike and Jonathan. He wants to make Andrew dress up like a penguin, but he also wants more challenges.
Yeah,
we had a challengers section a while ago before it all just got too hideously tired.
But we never did it. Yeah.
How about a monthly challenge with one update post and one conclusions or something similar? It could be something like. It doesn't have to be a knee-deep technical stuff like set up a rival Amazon web shop in Ruby. It could be something silly like make Andrew dress up as a penguin. And Vot Nerified says, I know you're all very busy people, but I really enjoyed the challenges section you used to have. If you could find time for this, even if you were to spread a challenge out over more than one podcast, that'd be great.
I think we should do it.
I do.
It was time-consuming, and the main problem was we never did it in the end, but we should... We all agree that it was a good part of the podcast. So the challenge is to find something that we have the time to do that's interesting enough to do. So I think we will do it. We'll probably do one and then do something else the following episode and then report back on it the episode afterwards.
The best, I think my favourite one of this was the use KDE
for a week.
Because otherwise I never would.
Yeah, we did things like use the command line for a week and use a distro that you don't usually use. So we can even just do those again.
We can.
Because things have changed a lot, probably in the 2 or 3 years.
Things move.
Okay, so let's do it. Starting next time, we'll replace Speak Your Brains.
Zealous, or Zealous, says, I'm happy that there is a podcast and a magazine. Sometimes there's no need to fix what ain't broke. I would perhaps suggest, though, that you do not record in whomever's house it was with all the traffic going past, as per earlier this year. Perhaps you don't chug your pint so fast in the pub and therefore all have to get up for more beer halfway through.
The truth of that podcast was that all the meeting rooms were taking up with meetings over redundancies at the company, so the only place we could go was to Andrew's house.
Yes, and that wasn't traffic, that was delivery men sweeping up my gravel driveway, dropping off bottles of gold-plated champagne. Also, he ends that, he or she ends that with, oh, and I'd love to hear someone try to pronounce Zealous again. Hint, it does not rhyme with moose. Oh, fail. The Linux Confessional. This is a good idea. Father Malone.
Not verified. Not by us, anyway. By a higher power.
Says, repent. How about a things that Linux isn't very good at section, in which the OS or available software or whatever lags behind the Microsoft or Apple offerings, blah, 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 blah. Oh, this, come on, sentence structure. It doesn't make any sense. All right, so talk about something that Linux isn't very good at. Call it the Linux Confessional and maybe introduce it with some soothing chapel organ music. Once the problem is solved, Linux will be absolved of its sins by Andrew. Of course.
Of course. Well, he's obviously looked at the Wikipedia page on Linux format.
Yes. I put in square brackets there, or maybe Nick, because of his ecumenical discourse, which he inserted into Hot Picks once. More Effie. Vot Nerified says, I want Effie to be in every podcast. Woodbite says, once every podcast, you should get Effie to say a northern expression. A good one to start with would be, you're not as green as you are cabbage looking. He also needs to attempt the accent. Hank says, what is, you're not as green as you are cabbage looking? Good idea with Effie, but you need to explain the term to us cousins across the pond.
I've heard the expression, but I don't know what it means.
I don't know what it means either. Is it the same as many a mickle max a muckle? I've already read those out before. Somebody wants more pink ponies. Oh, that's Yowch. Hello. Finally, Spanguages says, as I have said before, I would like to see Speak Your Brains dropped for offensively elitist reasons. He goes on to arrogantly review our current sections. He gives News 5 out of 10, Discovery of the Week 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
And mentions, oh, I meant to offer Graham a SID chip ages ago. Does he still need one?
Wow, you should sell them on eBay, you know. SID chips are awesome, but I couldn't with a clear conscience take one from you. However, if you want to sell it, yeah, I'll buy off you.
Ransom Raves, 3 out of 10. Speak Your Brains. Trite, facile, boring. I don't care what the little people think. It doesn't seem to provoke discussion or really give me anything more than I'd get from reading a randomly selected forum post each week. -7 out of 10.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Interesting number.
Open ballot, 8.7 out of 10. Really enjoyable, love the discussions it provokes, and perhaps hypocritically contrary to my number 4, the generally very high quality of the comments. I like that you mix it up with both serious topics and flippant lighter stuff. Also love Andrew's occasional mild taking that of the comments. That was a rubbish comment. I hate your comments. Overall, it's generally the discussions that I like. Anything which provokes that amongst you is good. Even when it veers away from Linux a bit, a verbal explanation by experts of the ideas and issues surrounding Linux, our Linux culture, is something I can't get elsewhere and thoroughly enjoy. I think you may be sort of over-aggrandizing us by calling us experts. But no, that's nice. Thank you. So, for the most part, keep what you're doing. You're good, says Spangwidges.
Awesome.
That's nice.
Really awesome.
I've got a feeling of general positivity.
Yeah. Considering this is the first podcast of season 5 and, you know, it's been a difficult couple of weeks, to see so many great positive comments has really helped.
So.
So we need more arguments.
We need more arguments. We need to simultaneously do it less and more in the pub.
We need Nick Veitch, Mike Saunders and Jonathan Roberts to be back here.
Yeah. We need to rewind the clock.
If we could turn back time.
We need to get rid of Speak Your Brains.
Yeah.
We need to maybe look at a new feature along the lines of Distro of the Fortnight.
Yeah.
Or Tweak of the Week.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, that's actually something we could easily do as the one more thing. So there's some consistency for the one more thing at the end. I don't mind doing that.
Yeah.
Finding a Tweak of the Week.
Absolutely. We need to get Effie to be more northern.
That's going to be tough.
Find things.
After 20 years in England.
He's just about got good at saying, all right, me lover. Things that we wish Linux had, or things that Linux doesn't do very well. Maybe that's one to play around with.
Well, yeah, I think one of the... If we do like the challenges one every other episode, then we've got something we could kind of mix in, like a random choice of what people's suggestions are.
Ah, that's brilliant.
In the middle. So one of them could be that. One of them could be, you know, like fight.
Prolific Puffin suggests, user tip of the fortnight. So we get people to contribute tips. We pick the best one or the most apt one for that fortnight, and then the winner of the contributor gets 3 free issues of Linux Format. We don't get that many copies of Linux Format, actually. They all go straight to the advertising monkeys who throw them in the bin. But that's a nice idea.
Yeah. Excellent.
Wow.
Well, that's it at the end of the first.
Yeah.
I think that went quite well. I think mostly thanks to the great contributions of the readers.
Yeah, totally. Listeners. That was going to be my one more thing, just to say thanks for all the imaginatively fecund stuff
we get.
It's good.
It really does help. Once again, I'll say, if you could leave a positive comment on Google Play for the next Format magazine, that would be awesome. Other than that, we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Bye. It's such a nice day.